When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone!
Welcome to the 3-0 Show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show. It is Thursday, March 31st. Derek Van Riper, Bridgeroli, and the King of Waffles, Eno Saris, here with you. We are just over a week away from the start of the season. We're recording this one day early, so opening day is almost here. On this episode, we have a great grab bag of topics, a few things happening around the league. I'm pretty excited about the humidor situation that Eno found out about at the end of last week. All 30 parks will have a humidor. We'll talk about the impact of that. City Connect jerseys. One has been revealed, and it's fantastic. We'll describe what that project is, what it means, and why we are excited about it. Second base is going to move in the minor leagues. Albert Pujols is back in St. Louis. I don't know what year it is anymore. We'll probably get to some bold predictions as well. So I got to ask, King of Waffles, you got a bear over your shoulder.
Oh, those are Lederhosen, by the way. Those are my Lederhosen from when I was 3 years old.
That's what I couldn't figure out. I'm like, I can identify everything else in the background. We worked together a lot. Would not have guessed Lederhosen with 100 guesses.
I did some modeling. Some Lederhosen modeling.
What a fun fact.
Fascinating. Those who are watching on YouTube, including Eno's mom, I do have a ring light. I actually prefer to be dark because I look terrible for this show, but maybe I'll bring out the ring light one day. We will get better at posting little clips, and I will brush my hair and put the ring light on, and then you can see what I look like in the daytime in all my glory.
I took a shower today, so I feel like I'm clubhouse
leader.
Yeah,
you look fresh and clean, dude.
I even shaved. I don't have that shadowy, day of stubble.
I feel special.
Yeah, you look younger, refreshed. Yeah, with the shade.
And the head-on camera shot hides some of the gray that I'm getting down the lines here. First and third base lines are getting a little gray, but everything out in center field still looks all right. Losing some in the power alleys, but all right, let's move on to actual show content. We were told that there's not enough banter, that we just go. People don't like when we just get into topics, so I'm sure we'll have a lot of feedback about that bit of banter since it was somewhat inorganic, but
strange.
I actually want to go kind of in reverse order of the things I was teasing, though. I want to start with Albert Pujols going back to St. Louis, because I remember when we were doing this show together on the Rates and Barrels feed last season, when the Angels let him go, and then when the Dodgers picked him up, I laughed. I thought it was ridiculous. And I was a little nervous about it because the Dodgers win a lot of games and they're a well-run organization. And if they saw something in Albert Pujols and I didn't see it, then maybe I was actually the dummy in that case, right? But the thing that I completely overlooked about the Pujols addition last year, which from a performance perspective and the limited role he was in, he was very good for the Dodgers as mostly a pinch hitter type against left-handed pitching. The way that the clubhouse was just kind of gravitating around him, that was a big deal. And I think I underestimated the impact that a player, even of Pujols' caliber, could have on a team that was already a great team. And Britt, this is something that I think you probably would have said, hey, that's exactly why he was there in the first place. Because you've been in those clubhouses. You can see how players interact in that way. So thinking about him going back to St. Louis, it's not just the happy, feel-good, Albert Pujols is wearing the same uniform he wore when he first broke into the big leagues again. There's a significant impact he can have on other players that are going to be there for the next half decade.
Yeah, it's so funny. Last year I was in St. Louis when the Dodgers were there, and they had just gotten him. And they're in St. Louis, and Max Scherzer, who was you know, trade deadline pickup for the Dodgers, was like, Albert, like running around like a fan. He's like, I got to meet Albert. We got to take a photo in front of the arch. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be there, got my own photo of Scherzer and Albert in front of the St. Louis arch. And Pujols walks away and Scherzer's like, oh, that's going on the mantle. Like just totally turned into, this is a 3-time Cy Young Award winner, totally turning into a fanboy, right? And you heard Nolan Arenado, when he came to St. Louis, talk about, hey, Albert, you're my favorite player. I hope you know you're my favorite player. And I think we kind of forget that, one, these guys are fans, and two, that guys like Pujols have been playing for so long that they really transcend that. This isn't just a veteran player you're bringing in, right? This is an icon. I was in Cardinals camp when Molina came to camp, and that was a huge deal, right? They had a team meeting. They had applause. Guys were just so over the moon to see Molina, who they knew was coming, but he was a late report for personal reasons. I can't even imagine to be a fly on the wall when Albert Pujols walks through those doors. I do think you can't really quantify it. And obviously having the DH universally really opened the door for this to happen. I don't know how much he has left in the tank, but I know what he does to the side, the example he sets, just his presence being there. Like, you're a young pitcher, it's the eighth inning, and in steps Albert Pujols, you're kind of in your head a little bit, right? I mean, pitchers and players talk all the time about how they don't really get super like shell-shocked or they, you know, but Albert Pujols is different for a lot of players. And I think that has a little bit of a mystique factor. Even if he's not the same player, even if he's just only got a little bit left, I think this is such a cool move overall for St. Louis fans, for baseball fans, for anybody who just enjoys nostalgia. This is just awesome.
Yeah, I think it's funny because from like the perspective that I usually have on baseball, which is just, you know, the numbers, the projections, you know, how does this change the team's quality when it comes to, you know, the spreadsheet, whatever. I know they don't play it on the spreadsheet, but, you know, that's where I start. And it's a very small move. It's a tiny move in terms of, like, this is a guy who's going to platoon DH with Corey Dickerson, you know, and he's going to get the small side of the platoon. But that's not how it felt in camp, right? I mean, they're talking about Molina and, like, Wainwright hugging Molina when he heard the news and, like, you know, and Molina texting him at 6 in the morning, like, are you coming to St. Louis, you know? So, you know, I think that this is a great place for him to finish his career, and actually a really good role for him numbers wise. Like he like walks an above average rate. It's like a 9% walk rate, like 12-14% strikeout rate against lefties. You know, he still really has the capability to do some damage against lefties, even though defenders like play him on the outfield grass and it's only doubles and homers and walks for him. I think that he can have an on-the-field presence that's meaningful for this team. It actually fits. I do feel a little bit bad for Lars Nootbaar, who I trained with a little bit at Driveline. I feel like the Cardinals now, I don't know what they will do for the fourth outfielder, but, you know, it may not be Nootbaar because they may want him to get more reps. But in any case, the team really likes this. They seem to really pick up with this, and he does fill a decent role on this team. You know, kudos all around.
This is an interesting Cardinals team, Britt. I mean, they made the great run in the second half of last season. You and I look very silly when that happened because you called it. And the problem I have with them right now is actually kind of similar to the problem I had with them in the second half of last season before they went on that run. I think they have some of the same flaws, and unfortunately they're dealing with a Jack Flaherty injury and an Alex Reyes injury, and I think their pitching depth, especially their starting pitching depth, is going to be tested pretty much immediately to begin the season.
Yeah, I think those are good points, and I think when you're an older team like they are, and we've discussed this with the Yankees, you need to stay healthy, right? Wainwright's not young. Pujols isn't young. Molina's not young. You need to stay healthy, and the Flaherty thing, it seems like they haven't really been able to count on him giving them what they need. And without him, they're in my opinion, like, you're so much less of a formidable rotation, right? As you said, they don't have that depth. So I think that's important. I think another thing, if the Cardinals do somehow stumble in this when they get hot, like we saw last year, that's important to remember when you have these three veteran guys who are revered in that clubhouse. And this reminds me of the Nationals in 2019. They kind of adopted this whole, like, we're going to win for Ryan Zimmerman because the guy's been here forever. And I think you may see that as a rallying cry if the Cardinals do get in this expanded playoffs, because you can stumble in maybe as a 500 team this year. That wouldn't be surprising. You might be under 500 and stumble in. I could certainly see the Cardinals kind of saying, like, we're winning this for these three guys because these three guys are done. And that kind of providing maybe that little extra chip, that little extra push that teams need. Like, this isn't just for me. You know, I'm TJ McFarland. I'm gassed. I'm pitching in the seventh inning for the third day in a row. This is for Molina and Wainwright and Pujols. And I don't think people realize what that can maybe do to galvanize a team that's kind of on the brink. And I see the Cardinals, who really came into the winter with not a whole lot of holes overall. They were pretty solid. They needed maybe a late inning reliever. I see a team like the Cardinals that if they stay healthy, they are kind of a team on the brink. They're a team that could contend, but we wouldn't be that surprised if they didn't make the playoffs, right? They're kind of a team on the edge here, and we're trying to see where they fit. Certainly the Reyes injury is also a soul crusher. I mean, they need late inning guys. They need Flaherty, or I don't think they really have a chance, no matter how much nostalgia you can package up.
Yeah, they just signed Aaron Brooks, which kind of seems to be a finger sort of pointing at that issue you're talking about, underlining the pitching depth problem. I'm not trying to speak too poorly of him. I'm just saying, like, they are active. They're trying to do more, add more players. But really, without Jack Flaherty, they seem like a team of a bunch of twos and fives in the rotation, you know? And they're kind of missing that one. Maybe Waino can be it. You know, that curveball seems ageless, but you'd still kind of want to have, you know, a Batman and a Robin situation. So maybe they can trade for something in the middle of the season if, you know, by the trade deadline, if they stay in it. But we may have a problem where we have more buyers than sellers at this trade deadline. So just to preview what happens with the expanded playoffs, I feel like you'll have two or three teams that are, you know, definitively sellers. And so the prices will be driven higher on their assets that they have, the players that they can trade. And so, you know, if they do want to go get John Means or somebody at the deadline, they may have to pay kind of a bucket load for it. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out for them. Maybe Jack Flaherty is their trade deadline acquisition.
GMs love that so much when the injured guy comes back mid-season and they can just have an upgrade without giving anything up. It is the best thing. I mean, Brian Cash. That's on the Brian Cashman bingo card, I think, at this point.
They always say it too. Like, oh, we got this guy who was on our roster. We think that's a pretty good upgrade at the trade deadline. Yeah. You know, fans are always upset about it.
You know, it's just the posturing, though. It's just to try and not make it seem as urgent as it is to get the help that they need. But pitching and defense were keys there. The park obviously makes the pitching play up. So I think it's easy to look at this team on paper and be underwhelmed. But when you look back at how they did it last year, you start thinking about some of the younger players they've got. We could get more from Dylan Carlson. Harrison Bader showed signs of taking steps forward. Maybe Nolan Gorman comes up and makes an impact. And then Paul DeJong could be a bounce back player. They've got a lot of ways where some of their flaws could be papered over pretty quickly. Maybe they put more runs on the board this year than they did a year ago with some of those possible developments happening in St. Louis. I love that you got a John Means and a Lars Nootbaar in the first 12 minutes. You know, that is very impressive.
Eno's bingo
card. Get my guys
in
there.
Let's move on to the interesting story that Jason Stark had. Second base in the minor leagues, they're going to move in. I think it's just the lower levels, if I remember the story correctly, right? They're going to move second base in toward home plate. I never knew there was anything wrong with the position of second base before. I didn't look at a baseball diamond and have that doesn't look quite right. It always just looked right in my head. So this is one of those things where the first thing my mind went to was, hey, this is another way stolen bases could eventually go up. If this becomes a change that we see across all levels in the future, it's another way to really juice up that part of the game, which has been in a kind of long-term sort of decline for the better part of a decade now. So were there any other takeaways that you guys had from that story, Britt? Is there anything that you thought was interesting about the possibility of moving that in at more levels in the future?
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. I think anytime you're tinkering with the game, there's always, and we've talked about this before, like you think it's going to do one thing and 10 other things come with it. So my first thought was like, all right, what happens here? Does it change how we value catchers? Does it change how we value arm strength, you know, how in the middle of the infield. What about double plays? Teams that are slow to turn double plays, teams that are fast to turn double plays, right? Like this has such a big impact. And we've talked before about making the bases bigger, right? Like making it easier to get from first to second and kind of the ripple effects there. And I think this is a similar thing where you're going to see, you know, some interesting ripple effects. So that was kind of how my mind worked was, okay, how is this going to change the game in a way we don't expect? Because it seems like every time a new rule is introduced, it changes the game in a way that few of us expect. So that's kind of what I took away from reading that. Also, it's such a Jason Stark story, right? He's so great at presenting like what can be a boring topic at times, and he breaks it down and has this conversational tone where you feel like you're having a chat with Jason Stark.
Makes it exciting
time.
Too.
Yeah. Definitely makes every time it you exciting. Read one of his columns, like he's like got exclamation points and little subheaders, and you're like, man, this guy could rewrite the encyclopedia and I would just read it. Like, he's just terrific.
If you were going to reread the encyclopedias, what letter, which volume would you pick up first?
Ooh. I don't, maybe like a rand. If Jason Stark's writing it, something like X, right? Because he's going to be like X-ray and like X, I don't know. I now can't think of any other X word. But yeah, right. Yeah. Xylophone. And he's just going to be all excited about it. So I think X.
It's interesting when something like this happens and there's, you know, some part of me even, and so I'm not trying to, you know, put people in a box, but like there's a group that says they don't like it. You know, they don't like to change the sort of basic facts of the game. But when he drew that diagram of where second base is, you're kind of like, whoa, this is weird. Like, this isn't how it was supposed to be. Like, for first and third, we measured the base path from the tip of the back of the base, back of home plate, to the back of the base. So if you drew a diamond, the bases are completely within the corners of the diamond. But second base, for some reason, we measure it to the middle of the bag. And so you have this one base that's just hanging out there that's like half in, half out of this diamond we've created, you know? And so this, all these notions we have of like the 90 feet is perfect, or even like 60 feet, 6 inches is perfect. Well, dude, we've changed that. You know, like it hasn't always been 60 feet, 6 inches. Second base hasn't always been where it is. So let's change it back. And maybe that'll do some good things for the game. And also, you know, I did a piece with Andrew Baggerly about, yeah, there it is. Look at that second base. Once Jason said it, when he first said it, I was like, I don't see it. It was like a Rorschach test where I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, what is second base doing like that?
Yeah, great point. You can't unsee it now. You're like, second base is out of order.
Why is that not in the diamond?
Great little ad there, Derek. If you're not watching on YouTube, like, you should be. And sorry that I don't have a remote.
It's good to have the visual there. But and then I did a piece with Baggerly about how stolen bases are actually, teams are more efficient than they've ever been in the history of baseball. They are more successful at stealing second base than they've ever been. And that's because they've engineered it. You know, Stark mentioned this in the piece, like they know exactly what the pop time, how the pop time of the catcher. They know exactly what the pitcher's time is to the plate. And if those two times don't add up to the player on first with his ability to get to second, then they say go, you know, and now they're successful like 78% of the time. Break even is like, you know, 68. So like they've figured it out how to be successful on the base paths. If you change it by an inch or something, you will change that math. And there will be stolen bases. There will be more stolen bases, like 100%. But I do love that Britt mentioned these other things. Like, there is the stuff that we don't know. You know, like, what will the effect be on defense? What will the effect be on singles and doubles? Will there be a bunch of more new doubles because of 3 inches? Maybe, maybe not. It all depends on how many close plays there are. Usually, I think you see a guy, you know, slide into second, no throw. I would say that's like right on a double. Like, they're not that often that it's like a bang bang play at second.
Yeah, unless they're trying to stretch a single. Like, they're just a fast guy trying to stretch a single.
So there might be more of those.
Correct. If you're fast.
Yeah, but there might not be that many because that doesn't happen that often. Ozzie Albies takes those big turns, you know, every once in a while he turns, he ends up on second. But that'll happen a little bit more often. That's exciting, though. It's still an exciting play, and a stolen base is an exciting play. So these are exciting plays that'll happen more often, and the sort of boring kind of ground rule double type stuff won't really change that much.
Yeah. That's true. You're right. We're not all of a sudden going to see Albert Pujols stretching a single into a double because of this right. move. But a Trey Turner, like, it could matter for guys that have. And if you've ever talked to, like, either of you, like, an elite base stealer, Eno's right. It is not just like, oh, I go when I feel like it. It is down to a science now yeah. versus, like, 10, 12 years ago when I got into the game and there was, like, Michael Bourne and Carl Crawford and everything was more based off of feel. We just didn't have those numbers now. You talk to these elite base stealers, and everything is plotted out. They do not like to miss, right? When they go, they want to go. And I'd be surprised. Yeah, exactly. It just seems like those percentages keep climbing. And that's why you don't see a lot of guys even attempt it anymore. It's like a small group of base dealers that are still left in the game that are very good at
it. Oh, yeah. You're talking to some fantasy baseball players here. Stolen bases are scarce. They're hard to find.
We will draft very average or below average players at inflated prices for the possibility of 20 stolen bases. So this is that's exactly why this was where my heart was as soon as I saw it. I'm like, more steals. But you're right to point out the other issues that might come up as a result. This is the problem with changing any rules.
If it means more triples, though, ooh, I think triples yeah. are the most exciting
triples play are the best. Game.
God, I love triples.
Oh, they're the best. You guys, totally off topic, but not that off topic. Should I play fantasy baseball this year? I've never played. I realize
you should. Oh, yeah.
Should I? Because I'm going to have a little more time to kill because I'm going to be on maternity leave later this summer. And then also, I feel like maybe I should play. But the
that'll
cardinal
keep you
rule,
in the
though,
game.
Is you don't. Right, you don't talk about your fantasy team.
Yeah.
In the clubhouse. No,
definitely not in the clubhouse.
Oh, yeah. I once asked Dexter Fowler why he didn't steal more bases for my fantasy team. That went poorly.
Yeah, how was that question
yeah,
received?
Yeah, that's a no.
You can talk to players yeah. in the clubhouse about, like, fantasy football. They're into that. Yeah. They love that. Yeah. There's a great league
yeah,
in every
I
clubhouse.
I love fantasy football. Yeah, I had an intern one year when I was covering the Orioles, and he was like, Matt Wieters, first time he walks into the clubhouse and sees Wieters, he's like, you're on my fantasy team. And Wieters just, like, kept walking, didn't even acknowledge him. So, yeah, like, I will play, and I will talk about it and nerd out with you guys if I do on the show, but they will never mention it.
Yeah, Dexter Fowler was nice enough that we ended up having an actual interview about, you know, why he didn't steal more bases. But the look on his face when I said that first,
correct,
I knew that it went poorly.
it's a no-go.
Oh, the intern that was working with Britt, like, I'm sure at that age, I could have easily made a gaffe like that. Like, I have no doubt in my mind that I was capable of misfiring that badly. But I'm trying to think back to, you know, the situation we were talking about earlier in the show with Pujols and people being just kind of in awe. I have had those moments since joining The Athletic 3 years ago where you join a Zoom call, like a big company call, and you see a person you've watched on TV for 20 years, right? It's like David Aldridge, or the first time, like, I got to talk to Ken Rosenthal on a podcast. It was kind of surreal. It was like, wait a minute, like, you're over there. Like, what am I doing here? And you just think it's not an actual real life moment. Fortunately, those moments have happened in my 30s. So I've, like, just calmly been like, all right, this is cool, and just got through it. But at 22, I would have had the, holy crap, it's Ken Rosenthal. It's David Aldridge right yeah. there. So I understand where that comes from. And I'm glad that as I've aged, it's calmed down a little bit to a more socially acceptable sort of level.
Yes. You know, have you ever geeked out over a player in the clubhouse, like, externally?
Oh,
no.
I don't think so.
No? In your mind, have you? I've definitely in my mind. There's been a couple. Derek Jeter, when I covered the Yankees in 2009. Uh-huh. And a little voice in my head, I'm from Connecticut, was like, this is Derek Jeter that you're talking to. Like, stay cool. Stay cool. And then Cal Ripken.
So. I was pretty excited. I think the first time I talked to Zach Greinke, I was pretty excited because, like, he's a pitching nerd and I'm a pitching nerd. Yeah. And so I thought I was excited for the conversation, not like, oh my God, Zach Greinke, but more like, oh my God, I got to talk to Zach Greinke. Like, yeah. I this is what I wanted to do. for my career. So like, yeah. This is, I'm finally doing it, you know? Not so much like, oh my God, can I speak to Zach Greinke? I did have that problem in college. And it's funny, you mentioned age. In college, I was an arts and events writer. And I got to meet and interview Adele, the Funky Homo Sapien. And it went really, really badly. And it went really badly because I was kind of like, oh my God, Adele. And he was like, who is this joker? You know, and he kind of ignored me. He ignored me. And I was like trying to ask him questions for the Stanford Daily. And it was so crash and burn and hurt me pretty hard. So that's funny too, because some people are listening are like, who's Del the Funky Homo Sapien? Yeah,
I also would like to know. So I do think you age out of that. And again, like, the players I geeked out over are much older. They're not like the generation, like Cal Ripken Jr. coming to Orioles camp. Like, you're like, oh my God, that's Cal Ripken Jr. Like, externally I was fine, but internally in my head I'm like, be cool, Brittany, be very cool.
Oh, okay. John Smoltz, yeah. I got him on my podcast, and I grew up in Atlanta. Yeah.
Another one. Yeah.
I had a little bit of that. But then it was like a podcast, and I wasn't like standing in front of him, so we were just like, let's go.
Yeah.
It's fun.
But no fantasy talk anyway.
Yeah, not in the clubhouse. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I've spent 0 days in the clubhouse, but I know not to talk about my fantasy teams on day one if I ever find myself in one. We've got a really exciting thing that's back for the second season. The Nike City Connect jerseys are back. The Nationals announced or revealed what theirs look like. They're on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube right now, covering up all of our faces. And these are great.
Thankfully.
These are amazing. Oh. So I guess I have to...
Am I allowed to have 3 points of critique?
You are. But I want to describe them for the people who are listening, since this is mostly an audio show.
Well, okay, I'll do it. Like, so I do like these. They are gray. They're sort of like a light gray. It's very rare that I like a light gray jersey. So I do like them despite, because they have the pink cherry blossoms on them. I do like that. I think the WSH across the front should be in a curly font. I think there's a little bit of a weird sort of block letter with the blooms contrast there. But I do like them generally, and I like these. I like this approach because these are different jerseys, and they're not like the whole, like, remember the whole like future, what was the thing that they did, like the turn forward the clock day or something?
That was an all-star game thing, right?
Future jerseys. Awful,
yeah. Yeah, those were pretty bad. These, I think, range. They're, some are better and some are worse, but like, I think that they're really interesting takes and thinking outside the box and not just the same old jersey we've been looking at forever. So despite it being gray and the block letters, I like this.
All right. Britt, your thoughts?
I mean, I'm 100% going to at least buy the hat. I think they're awesome. And I'm not even a uniform person. I own zero big league hats. I think what they did a great job of, and like what City Connect is supposed to be, right? And when it works, it does this really well, is it embodies the city. And we live about half an hour from DC, and the cherry blossoms are such a big deal. I mean, the traffic is otherworldly around this time because people want to go to see these cherry blossoms. And when they're in bloom, they're terrific and they're everywhere. And it's a big part of Washington, DC, of springtime in Washington, DC. And the Nats did a great video kind of talking about, you know, how it parallels this long winter that you get through with no baseball and it's cold, and then the cherry blossoms come out and you know it's time for baseball again. And I just thought it was a really cool parallel, and it's kind of a really cool meaning to incorporate the cherry blossoms, because they could have done something with the Capitol, right? And it just would have been tired, you know, something else with DC, to kind of go above and beyond the obvious for most people and tie this in, and to get away with pink and gray as a jersey and have people like it this much. I mean, I call this a win, even though, as you said, I do think maybe the lettering, now that you said it, Eno, could improve on the jersey. I like the block W on the hat a lot. You know, people are upset that it doesn't say Nationals on it. It says Washington. To me, that's the whole point of City Connect, right? Is you're connecting with the city. I don't have a problem with that. I think this is a really, really awesome jersey.
So we have a few more teams coming later this season. I've got on the screen right now the 2021. You might remember the Red Sox wearing yellow jerseys for a point, or the White Sox black kind of fun, with the like white the pinstripes. Marathon,
yeah.
The Miami was the best.
Miami's awesome. And I've seen that like on people live, and I even talked to them about it because I was just like, that's pretty cool. And we talked about why Miami, it was because it's in Oakland. But the Dodgers one, I think, is took the fewest risks.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That Dodgers one is like basically just a new thing in the script. It just says
the White Sox too. I mean, I like the different colors. Like, I like what Miami did. I like what Boston did. Like, get out of your comfort zone, you know? Experiment a little bit. You know, Wrigleyville wasn't bad.
I just love the South Side. Like, I don't know. I love the like on black pinstripe. I don't know, something about it.
But to me, like, it is still very, like, immediately you're like, if you can't read that, like, if you stand far away, you know that's White Sox, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, anyway.
If you stand real far away, you're not necessarily like, oh, yellow, that's got to be Boston, right? If you can't read the Boston. Same thing with Miami. I think I like the riskier ones.
Yeah, I think so, too. Right, the Dodgers one just seems like whatever.
I think the Giants one fell flat last year. Remember the white jerseys with the orange gradient that faded
down to
white?
It does have like the fog thing going on. And that orange is very noticeable. it pops.
Should have been maybe an orange jersey, don't you guys think?
I think
that orange.
Fog in white on top of it.
Yeah, that would have been a little cooler.
I would have had the bridge going across the chest of the jersey with the fog. I think that would have been a cooler effect. And I think then having the numbers and everything else popping the way they normally do would have been good. And I think of this because if you've ever been in a press box and you've ever had to even from a distance try and track what's happening in a field, baseball's different. Baseball's slow.
Put names on the back of the jerseys, please.
Names and numbers need to be clear when you're trying to do work in a pro sporting context. So of all the jerseys on the screen right now, no one wants to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks kind of soft Vegas gold, I guess I would describe that color. It's not like shimmering, but it's kind like of desert. Pale.
It looks like what happened in college when all of my whites got rust on them. Like, that's literally
what is with that franchise? Like they're gray.
Because their uniforms are the ones you can't watch, you can't read. They're the ones that have the numbers you can't read because they're like gray on gray.
Well, and their gray, that charcoal gray they were using, that just looked wet. It just looked like everybody was sweating a lot, and I thought that looked really weird. So why do we care about these jerseys? Because this stuff's cool, because I think, especially for a team like the Nationals, relatively new team, of course, their look, I think, was just a kind of generic traditional baseball look. It's not bad. I don't think their uniforms look bad in any way, but I just think they're so safe in terms of how they were designed. A lot of the other new franchises that have been created in the last, let's say 30 years now, going back to when the Rockies and Marlins joined the league, they had bright, flashy colors. They had something unique about the logo, about the way the jersey was made that made you, even if you lived nowhere near that place, you kind of wanted that merch, especially as a kid.
I bought a big purple Colorado Rockies starter jacket.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Right.
Oh, remember when starter jackets were the thing? Oh, yeah. I had a Boston Bruins one. Oh, man, I love starter jackets.
I had a Miami Hurricane starter jacket, and I have a lot of questions for my parents about that now.
I think that's pretty weird. I have no real connection to Colorado at the time. I was living in Atlanta and going to school in Boston.
Super interesting.
I think I was winning as a result of the clearance rack in that instance. If I had to guess,
I think it might have been the Burlington Coat Factory.
Hell yeah. Oh, those were the days. Like I think we went to Sports Authority a lot, and they always had them on sale in the back. Remember Sports Authorities?
I thought Starter was going to make a comeback a few years ago, but it was for
naught. Instead, Zubaz did.
Alas.
I can't believe Zubaz came back. Let's talk about the humidors for a moment. All 30 parks are going to use them. We got into this a little bit on rates and barrels. And I think in the way you have broken this down, it seems like the impact is going to be in the more extreme environments that weren't previously using a humidor, especially the West Coast parks, right? I think you mentioned the Giants at Oracle Park, the A's at the Coliseum, and the Padres at Petco because of the atmospheric conditions in those parks that we might see the greatest change, where all three of those parks could play more hitter friendly as a result of this change?
Yeah, it's a little bit tough, I think, judging from my Twitter feed, for people to jump this. There's like a little bit of mental hurdle here. We think of humidity as like mugginess. So it's like hot. And there is a scientific thing going on where the hotter the temperature is, the more actual water vapor is in the air. Because the hotter the temperature is, the more water it can hold. But I think, and I'm pretty sure this is true, the actual metric we care about is relative humidity, which is given the temperature that you've got, how much water is in the air. And the reason that matters, why I think it's right, is because we've modeled what happened in Arizona and Denver when they added humidors, and we used relative humidity when we did that, and we entirely predicted what would happen, which is that homers went down about 13% in Colorado, and they went down 20% in Arizona because they're super dry. Now all the super dry parks have humidors. Now it's the super wet parks where the humidor will actually pull water out of the balls. Because humidors are not always about making something more humid. Humidors are about setting a certain humidity, and everything that's in that is always that humidity. So the most humid parks with relative humidity are Petco, Oracle, Oakland, and Progressive. And the reason those are is because they're kind of cooler parks near water. And that's they have a ton of water in the air. Those are places you see fog. Those are places that there's just a ton of water in the air because the water's right there. Those places are going to see an 8 to 13%, depending on which park we're talking about, increase in home runs. So that is a non-significant, that's a significant amount of homers when you talk about the park. When it talks about players, you're talking about 2-3 homers maybe per player, per slugger, that they might see more.
So places that are really humid, like Baltimore, that are already hitter friendly, where the ball flies out, how does that change things, if at all?
Yeah, it didn't show up in the top five when it comes to relative humidity. So I think that's just one of those places where there's a lot of water in the air because it's hot, you know. So I don't think it'll change Baltimore too much. I really think it'll affect the cold, humid parks the most.
Interesting. Though Baltimore, of course, moved the fences in, so they're in for a very abnormal year.
There's a lot of things going in different directions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I was trying to look at Arizona, and the first year Arizona did it was 2018. So I just used that. If you look at 2019, there was the rabbit ball. That was the ball. Yeah. That was the year where we broke all the home run years. So I didn't want to like compare 2019 Arizona to pre-humidor Arizona. So you have to make assumptions, and a lot of this is sort of guesswork, but the last couple of times they guessed at what Denver would do, and they guessed at what Arizona would do, and they were correct. You know, I'm talking about like Professor Alan Nathan, who's worked with baseball. He did a piece on this. Professor David Kagan did a piece on this. They predicted a certain amount and they were right. So I think relative humidity is the number, and using sort of modeling after what they did, we're talking about like a 10% increase in homers in Petco and sort of a 7 to 9% increase in San Francisco, Oakland, and Cleveland.
And we know the ball won't change this year. MLB has said the ball won't change this year. They've told the players the ball won't change this year. Hopefully it's just that one ball they want, the new ball. Yeah, so hopefully that all stays the same. I know I think last week there was a report of like a stickier rosin being introduced, but I was told over the weekend that it's nothing new. It's too late for any of this stuff to get ushered in.
Other than stricter enforcement of the sticky stuff rule.
Correct. They would have had to indoctrinate this in spring training. There simply wasn't enough time for that kind of stuff. So you're not going to see any.
So there's no pre-tag ball. Changes. There's no, right?
No.
No pre-tag correct. Ball. No,
correct.
No, crazy
no like
rosin.
Stickier rosin. Like you're not going to see any of that
No help for
stuff.
The pitchers. Just the stick. The stick is coming harder this year.
The stick is coming harder. Or so they say. Anyway.
Right.
But pitchers can, or MLB did propose, I don't know yet if the union's going to accept it, that they can use those PitchCom devices. Like the sign stealing thing is going to become a bigger crackdown, which I didn't see anyone. Maybe Greinke used it in a game, right? You know, like those devices. I don't know how I feel about those.
I'm worried that it creates a new arms race where like people are jamming their other, you know what I'm saying? Like you could have a Bluetooth jammer, right? Where you could jam their thing, or you could try to like hack it. You could just have a hacker who just like has it.
I love like all the different reactions that like Greinke uses it in a game. And I'm reading about like it came to Mets camp one day and it's like, bunch of guys are like, oh, I got to get used to it or I'll try it. And then Scherzer's like, no, hate it, won't use it.
Okay. These things take time when they're...
That guy's a national treasure.
Theoretically, I like it because theoretically it would cause, it would create, it's like we wouldn't have an Astros type situation. But I just worry that we would have a new Astros type situation where they have someone who's hacked into the feed and just straight getting the signals.
And I guess I thought, like, wrongly that, like, it would flash like a Fitbit, like fastball, but it actually says fastball. So
so somebody could hear it.
I think it was Brian McCann that said this in the article I was just referencing that was like, hey, what if it's really quiet or like if I have trouble hearing?
The guy on second can hear it.
Yeah. Or the guy at the plate can hear it, right? Like Brian McCann's thing is going like fastball, fastball. Like, I guess I don't understand. Like everybody can read. Everyone is capable of reading in the big leagues. Why wouldn't it just flash a number or flash? Yeah. That would be the best way to do it, right? Even if a team jammed it, is that if like,
they'd still have to break the numbers. They'd have to still break some code. But instead of it would actually speed up games a little bit because what we see now are pitchers have different codes in their hat, in their hats, right? And they have to take their hats off. Have you seen this during games? They take their hats off and check what code line. And they're like, okay, we're on the third code line. And then the catcher has to be like, okay, the third code line means this. Yeah. And then he throws the signals down. And then sometimes the pitcher will even have to be, oh man, what is he doing? And he has to look back at the card and be like, oh, okay.
it's the Da Vinci code. It's also changed the way that I take off my hat. So when I take off a hat, I kind of glance inside just to see if someone has put a note in there for me. Because I've seen so many grown men take off a hat and look inside it from watching so many games.
That's amazing.
Like, what are you looking for? There's nothing in there. There's no card. There's no message.
That's awesome. I love it.
I have problems. Speaking of Arizona, they were mentioned in passing both in the City Connect and just in that little conversation right there. They gave Ketel Marte an extension. 5 years, $76 million. And I think they're just one of those teams that we almost never talk about on this pod because, well, they exist in the NL West. And they're not the Dodgers, they're not the Padres, and they're not the Giants. And they don't seem to be as clueless as the Rockies, so they don't get the attention for the wrong reasons. They're just there. They just exist. They're just this franchise that doesn't seem like it has a clear-cut future in the postseason because of the division they play in. They've got young talent coming up. They just extended one of their best players. This kind of blew me away as I was digging around looking for some stuff about the D-backs for this year. They have the worst projected starting rotation in the big leagues, which doesn't seem right to me. That seems almost impossible because I think Zach Gallen
traded
could be
for
good.
And signed guys. You know?
Right. They brought in Brett Strom as their pitching coach. So you've got Gallen, you've got Bumgarner, who you signed. Merrill Kelly's having a nice spring. Luke Weaver, to me, there's still a possibility he could be good if he's a number four starter. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. They just brought in Zach Davies for innings. They still have Corbin Martin. They got Dan Straley coming back from overseas. Like, I'd be stunned if this ended up being the worst rotation in baseball. So I'm curious if you have any other Arizona-related thoughts, either this rotation not being as bad as projections say, being excited they at least extended Ketel Marte, maybe there's some prospects you like, but they are probably the most ignored team in the National League right now, if not maybe the entire league.
Yeah, that's true. You know what I like about them is they like kind of tried this winter and people were like, oh, Arizona's trying. Like, remember they signed Mark Melancon and I think they did something else and people were like, oh, Arizona. Okay. I remember on this podcast we were like, cool. Didn't think they were going to do anything, but all right, cool. That's kind of how I feel about them. They're probably the team I know the least about, which is kind of unfortunate, I guess. But I am curious to see what Strom does there after years and years of kind of being the guy credited with doing what he's done in Houston, right? Like, and conversely, how does Houston do without Brett Strom, right? Maybe they are. How can they possibly be the worst rotation? Are they basing it off of, okay, also they're going to have to face the Dodgers a million times and they're just going to crush, right? The Padres, who, you know, pick up Luke Voit are hoping to get back and be like the Slam Diego Padres again, right? They're facing the Giants. Like, is that also a product of the division? But if so, are the Orioles on that list? Because I feel like they're also in a division where
the Orioles are probably 29th.
They're 27th somehow.
Wow. 27th?
I can't believe it. I have no idea how that's possible.
Who else is at the bottom of this tier, Derek?
The Rangers and the Pirates are sandwiched in there. And they're all,
the Rangers.
To be fair, these are all very sketchy rotations. The Nats round out the bottom five, by the way, which is
my bold prediction was that the Nats would be the worst.
I saw that, yeah. Did you get a lot of hate for saying that the Nats can't develop anybody?
I did not.
You didn't get an angry phone call from Mike Rizzo?
Those are
a treasured pastime.
He does not have my number. I guess that's a good thing.
I'm going to give it to him when I see him.
Oh, thanks. No, you know, I think that the Diamondbacks are the team that we talk about that like tries to win 86 every year, try to build an 86 win team every year, and then hopes that it turns into 90 and they get into the playoffs. I don't think that they have enough money to do much more than that. And then they also have, I think, a little bit of a fatal flaw in terms of the fandom, which is they haven't been around long enough. It's not like Denver, where I didn't know this, but Denver apparently is like top five in attendance every year. The Rockies.
It's a cool stadium. It's a cool city. I mean, people like to drink beer.
And people go there in the summer. So I think it's like a thing you do when you go there in the summer, you know. I don't think that Phoenix has that. And then they also don't have the Diamondbacks were my grandfather's team. Mm-hmm. Where if you look at the Reds, Reds struggle a lot. But Reds readership, like we are uniquely tuned to this as national writers. We know when we write about a certain fan base exactly how many people read it and exactly how big the fan base is. If you can write about the Reds even when they're bad, and their piece will do well because I don't know that they've been there forever. You know, the Reds aren't the Reds like one of the first teams.
They're some of the original, but you're right. I crushed them once, and man, did I get mean, nasty comments for days.
Yeah. So you know, you get, but like in Phoenix, you just don't have that readership. So that leads to not paying attention and the national media not paying attention. I don't think it's like East Coast, West Coast bias. Like the national media pays attention to where the people care the most. They write about the Dodgers, you know, and the Padres fandom is actually pretty fervent and rabid. So like, you know, remember when everyone was excited even nationally about the Padres last year, at the beginning in spring training, right this time. So like, you know, just Arizona doesn't have any of that going for it. And, I think that they could pop one year and then we're all going to have to write like, sorry, you know, pieces. Sorry, we should have been paying attention. But the Marte piece, the last thing is the Marte extension is like Byron Buxton extension to me. It's below market, but the reason it's below market is because he's had a real hard time staying healthy. So I think it's a little bit like in the years where he's healthy, that's going to be an incredible value for the Diamondbacks. But for the player, he's like, I have to acknowledge I've had some trouble staying healthy.
Yeah. And they could still trade him. It's not a contract that it's like, oh man, can't trade this guy. They could still trade him.
He can still play center field and he's really good offensively.
It might not matter in terms of actually getting them into the postseason this year, but I do think building it at least a competent A bullpen. You know, Ian Kennedy is the setup guy. He was the other kind of veteran. It was like, oh, he went to Arizona. Kennedy and Melanson, plus some combo of JB Wendelken, maybe Noe Ramirez is a good sneaky addition there too. They get bulk from the rotation. Someone pops there. They have prospects. Corbin Carroll, if he hadn't been hurt last year, would probably be debuting early this year. Thomas is definitely up this year. Jordan Lawler eventually contributes. He's not coming up this year. Geraldo Perdomo
will get a chance this year. Seth Beer at DH.
You get Dre Jameson, Blake Walston. So you have some interesting players that are very close to the big leagues there, and they could end up being more of a thorn in the side of the other NL West teams than people realize. Which I know that's not a tagline for a poster that's going to get you to.
It's not a very bold prediction.
Watch the D-backs
this year. A little better
than
you think.
Yeah, right.
Put that on a sweatshirt.
This is not a bold prediction, but this is a slightly better team than people are giving them credit for.
Those spring training shirts, so they always have like some slogan, you know?
Yeah.
The Diamondbacks, we're a little better than you think.
A little bit. I mean, not a lie, the three of us should wear those sweatshirts on air. Like, the podcast is a little better than you think.
Right. The 3-0 show, a little better than you think.
It's not going to the postseason, but we might flirt with 500 into August.
Totally.
I want to see Seth Beer hit. And I also want to see Seth Beer play for the Brewers
someday. I like beer.
I like beer, right. I think people could rally around Seth Beer for that exact reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could have some good shirts for that.
No, there's some great names there. Did you guys see the pitcher in Anaheim whose last name is Junk, and he's a pitcher? Like, there's some great names. I think it's like
Jansen. It's Jansen Junk, right?
Jansen Junk. That's Jansen what. Junk. Yes.
I was like, he throws 84.
Was it Josh Outman?
Yep, Josh Outman. Yeah. Yep. Bob Walk from when we were kids.
God, some good ones.
Try to think of other great baseball names.
Yeah, like especially if you're a pitcher, like, you know, like Outman, Junk, like just having a last name that kind of goes with the pitching, like the headlines write themselves.
Yeah, we need a pitching prospect named Stuff. What would the first name be? That's
right. Oh, Spencer Stuff.
Spencer Stuff. Spencer Stuff pitched in the SEC.
Spencer Strider in Atlanta has really great Stuff numbers and a great mustache too.
We're putting Spencer Stuff on an SEC school, and then, he's going to come in, be kind of
the Stuff Plus.
Elite Stuff guy, no command. Stuff. Oh, it's going to be just wonderful. Wow, we covered a lot of ground already with mostly nonsense. Eno had some bold predictions.
Hey, we're better than you think.
Yeah, the 3-0 show, mostly nonsense.
Mostly nonsense. Title this episode, mostly nonsense.
The Diamondbacks of podcasts.
Here we go. Eno's 10 bold predictions for a wacky 2022 MLB season. I'm not going to read all 10. I think you should have a subscription to The Athletic, which you can get for $1 a month at theathletic.com/baseballshow.
Boom. Tagged.
I'm going to pick a few of these, and I want Britt to grade them on their boldness on a 1 to 5 scale.
Ah.
One
I
being
already, the hard, I already, this is the I already hardest mentally part. Judged you.
The hardest part of bold predictions is getting this part right. So you have peered into my soul already, Derek Van Riper.
1 to 5 is the scale. So 1 being not very bold.
It's not even
and
how
five...
good these predictions are. Oh, just how bold they are. All
right. I already judged him when I read the story. I was like, that one I like. No. Yeah, that one.
All right. I think this one's pretty fun. So I'm going to start us with this one. Joey Votto will hit 40 homers for the first time in his career at age 38.
That was insanely bold. So it's a 5, right?
A full-on 5. Okay.
Thank you.
5 out of 5.
Joey Votto said, it's not that bold, dude, but, you know, it's Joey Votto.
That's because he's Joey Votto. He's hit 100.
He was playing you a little bit.
He's using some lightsaber bat, according to C. Trent, which if you're listening, definitely read that story that C. Trent wrote about it yesterday.
But he's old. But, he's never done it.
That's like saying, exactly. Like, but here's the thing. These guys have to believe they can do crazy things or they wouldn't be in the big leagues.
That's true.
You have to remember that, you know? So hit me
well,
with
I'm glad you thought
one.
It
I
was
got,
bold.
I got that one.
Thank
what
you.
Would
I
got the scale you. Be for boldness? Would it be like tubs of ranch dressing? No, it's not bold. It's like
no, like spicy, like spicy, like bold, like hot sauce.
Like Frank's Red Hot Sauce. Yeah, so five like bottles of sauce pepper. On this one.
Ghost pepper.
Yeah.
Ghost pepper sauce. Okay, let's come up with another one here. That one's not bold, so I'm just going to move right on past that one.
No, you got to give me a one on one of them.
Oh, all right. The Rays will have the best pitching staff in baseball.
I saw that one.
Not bold.
Said, thanks for going on a ledge.
Oh, damn.
Now, we might have a preconceived understanding of how much you like them that makes that seem less bold to Britt and I than it seems to
me.
Everybody else.
Right. I think anyone who's a baseball fan, it's like saying the Rays will be better than we expect.
Okay.
So are we saying one hot sauce here?
Damn.
That's a one hot sauce.
What is the one? What is the one of hot sauces? It's like the Taco Bell mild package.
Mild.
Taco Bell mild. I haven't been to Taco Bell in a long time. Do they have new sauces?
Now that you live in California, please don't ever go.
No, I have no intention of ever going to Taco Bell again.
That's my random fact. I'm from a town with no chains, so I've never had Taco Bell. I've never had KFC. I've never had Pizza Hut.
Never.
Never. Not in college. That's impressive.
Wow. No. We had other drunk places to eat at in college.
Fair.
Like local drunk places?
Like
Culver's or something?
Dude. Well, like a Mena's, and they had like Dubs. And they were basically like big burritos that were just like gut bombs. And you went to bed like, why did I eat all that?
Yeah, nice. That sounds like college. I remember that.
That kind of stuff. Hit me with a hard one now. Maybe
all right. I think this one's pretty good. Logan Gilbert has the best season of any Mariner starting pitcher.
Okay. Yeah, this is the one of the ones that I was like, okay, I wouldn't have picked it as a bold prediction.
It's basically outperforming Robbie Ray. I think that's the bold part of it. The guy that got the big contract, Logan Gilbert's going to be better than Robbie Ray is more or less what Eno's saying here.
I think that's bold. I don't think that's Joey Votto bold. I would say it's probably a three and a half hot sauces. Well,
all right, right in the middle.
All right, okay. right in the middle of the scale. Yeah. Let's try one more before we go. I don't want to throw that one out there because I think that's just going to happen. And okay, this one's pretty bold. Nate Lowe hits 30 homers.
Yeah, that was another one.
Right. But there's some boldness in there for y'all. I like
that. That one had a little zest. I'm going to go with four on that one.
Well, see, I'm going to go with four. Four? All right. So good.
Four's a good score on the boldness. Yeah. I mean, 18 last year, played 157 games. So that's a pretty big step forward. A 54.5% ground ball rate. It takes some changes to get to that 30 home run level, especially in that ballpark.
Agreed. Is it bold, do you guys think, for Albert Pujols to reach the 700 homers? He's not that far away, but he also hasn't hit that many homers.
26.
He needs 26 to get there?
Yeah. So where do you put that in the spot? I mean, I know this
bold.
Just happened.
That's probably four out of five.
It's bold, right?
At least. Yeah.
Is that yours?
Bold. Yeah. I think it's spicy. I think he does it.
Wow. That means he like pushes Corey Dickerson off of DH a little bit. I like it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's very bold. I just don't think the playing time is going to be there.
I think he's coming back with a few things in mind. And if you don't think that's one of them.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. And he hit 17 last year, so...
So he's going to hit 26 with like 250 plate appearances?
Well, no, I mean, he'd have to.
He doesn't have to play the field, really, if he doesn't want to. They could save him a
little.
Yeah,
he'd have to push the guy off.
He hit 17 in 296 plate appearances last season. It's not impossible.
He would need like 400.
It's bold.
Yeah, I like it. That's bold. It's spicy. The thing with bold prediction is I need to write something. So I want to have some sort of thinking process behind it. I'm not just like, hey, that dude there is going to be amazing. Like Tyro Estrada is going to hit 35 homers. Like I have nothing to write about. Then I'd just be like, because I said so. So the thing is that has something behind it. And then I also want to get 3 out of 10 right. So I don't want to go 0 for 10. I'm always aiming for 3 out of 10. I think the Rays one was a little bit of a, okay, I think I get this one right.
That was your layup.
My one layup.
Maybe for next week we do some bold ones of our own. You know, can pick some different ones. But that would be kind of fun.
Rate you guys.
Before the season starts.
Yes.
How bold you guys are. Stare into your souls.
And I realize that the plight of being a writer, you can't just be this little hot take machine on a podcast and fire your takes into Twitter and just run away like, well, my job here is done. I have that luxury. You two do not. That is going to do it for this episode of the 3-0 show.
He's going to end on that.
Yes, he's going to leave.
Later, fools.
As I said earlier, $1 a month gets you in the door at theathletic.com/baseball show. So be sure to get a subscription if you don't already have one. Find Britt on Twitter at Britt_Giroli. You can find Eno on Twitter at EnoSaris. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Friday.
At the 3-0 show, you've always got the green light.